The Dog Bites podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports on Dog Bites.
Touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome into the podcast, which will soon be the Bulldogs Extra podcast. Ryan, is that right? What's the story there?
Yeah, we're rebranding a little bit, getting away from the Dog Bites sound. Chose Georgia Bulldogs Extra. You can find that online, but it'll also be the name of our podcast. New logo and everything. It should still pop up, I believe, in iTunes, just like Dog Bites, but it'll look a little different this time.
Wait, you said the Georgia Bulldogs Extra podcast. Do I need to throw Georgia in there, or can I just say Bulldogs Extra?
I think Bulldogs Extra can work, too.
I thought you had an extra word in there.
There you go.
All right, we're going to have a special guest in studio today. Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarrity will join us to talk the coming football season and Bulldog athletics in general, and we took some questions via the Twitter from fans that had questions for Greg McGarrity. So that's coming up. First, Ryan, it's week zero, as somehow that's the terminology.
Yeah.
I don't know how long that's been a thing, but...
First time I heard that was high school, because high school seemed to play like early, a week early. And that was the first time I ever heard it. I guess it's transitioned up to the college game.
All right, it's going to be Miami and Florida on Saturday night. I think I saw John Rick, Mark Rick's son, the former Miami quarterbacks coach, saying that he was rooting heavily for the Hurricanes, not necessarily because it was his former employer, but because he grew up hating the Gators.
Well, yeah, he's got a deep hate for him through Georgia and I guess through Miami as well.
All right, also Saturday night it'll be Arizona at Hawaii, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time game. Ryan, will you be staying up late to watch some rainbow football?
I don't know. Maybe if I catch it. I've got a birthday to go to, so maybe if they're watching it at the festival I'm at.
You have a birthday to go to or a birthday party?
Oh, a little bit of both. There's going to be goats there, apparently, but that's another story.
All right.
Yeah. Long story.
I don't know what that's about. All right, let's talk about some important news. Word came Tuesday that the Sun Bowl will now be known as the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. Ryan, are you a big Frosted Flakes guy?
Never really got into those. A little too sugary.
All right. I thought about this. The top three breakfast cereals when I was a kid. And have you, I don't know if you've come up with your list. But
Yeah, I have a few.
And these are just what was on the top of my head. I'd have to sit down and really think about it long and hard. But I'm going to go with Golden Grahams.
Okay.
They still make that?
I don't know. I don't look for them.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lucky Charms.
Yeah. I like Lucky Charms.
With a little Frosted Mini Wheat in there as well.
Oh, God, no, not never Mini Wheat.
It's good if you let it sink into the milk.
That probably is a little better. It's not just dry. So you want mine now,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, what's yours?
Cocoa Puffs. Number one all time on the list. I even still get them, once every couple years just to get that taste again. But Cocoa Puffs are definitely still at the top of the list. I like your Cinnamon Toast Crunch. That's good stuff.
Mm.
Do you remember Smacks? Do they still make Smacks? They had a frog on the box.
Yeah. Was it Golden Smacks?
I don't remember. I remember eating those as a kid and loving them. And so that's high on my list. But nothing could top Cocoa Puffs. I mean, it's A number one. Still we get it today. See, I try to go healthy today and go Honey Nut Cheerios. Are you a cereal person today, or you give that all up as a kid?
I had a little turkey bacon for breakfast.
So you're not worried about your cholesterol with the... Well, I guess turkey bacon's a little better for you than...
Turkey is lean, yeah.
There you go.
All right, we're about a week and a half from the season opener against Vanderbilt. Meanwhile, there's no quarterback mystery at Georgia.
Hey, yeah.
Justin Fields is the quarterback at Ohio State to start against Florida Atlantic. Bo Nix at Auburn, the son of a former Auburn, I guess, quarterback, right? Coordinator?
No clue.
A true freshman starting at Auburn. It will be interesting to see if he's still has the gig come November when the Bulldogs played.
That's an Auburn name, though, to me.
Bo Nix.
Yeah.
So the news out of the scrimmage Saturday was the offense coming back. Jake Fromm hit some passes, some explosive plays. Kirby pretty much named every frontline wide receiver as a guy that that was on the receiving end of that. It's a good sign after the defense, I guess, got the better of the first team offense the first time around in scrimmage number one. Yep. Ryan, what was your takeaway from what you heard Kirby say?
Well, you know, I wrote a column about it on Saturday. It came out in Sunday's paper about how that was good news that, you know, and of course, maybe Kirby's feeding it. I don't know. You know, we only get basically what Kirby tells us, but it seemed that he was pleased with the emergence of some of the receivers that, you know, that's kind of been lacking, and they didn't know who was going to show up, especially, you know, after losing four guys from last year's team that were your top four receivers, and your best returning receiver is Tyler Simmons with 139-ish yards or so, and, you know. So I think it was great news that some of those guys stood out. And like you said, he named a couple. He named Cager. He named, I think, Kiaris Jackson at one point. He named Landers. Can't remember. He didn't name Demetrius. I noticed that. But some of the, you know, it was some guys that, you know, he threw Pickens in there, who obviously made the one-handed snag that went viral there. So, yeah, very, very good news out of Kirby the other day as far as the offense goes. What did you take out of that?
Well, you mentioned Demetrius. Interesting. I mean, he's working number one slot receiver.
Yeah, he was still out there yesterday, right? Yeah.
From what we could tell. I'm curious to see him play against Vanderbilt because, you know, he had a good spring by all accounts and then had some injury before, or maybe was just sick, before G-Day, so we didn't see him out there. Hadn't come up for any interviews, but certainly has an opportunity with this wide receiving group. One guy that didn't take part in the scrimmage was five-star inside linebacker Nakobe Dean, who is dealing with an ankle injury, Kirby Smart said. Mentioned it on air on 960 a.m. before the Touchdown Club of Athens visit on Monday night. He was working on Tuesday in the indoor facility with Ron Corson. We're going to get out there. We're recording this mid-afternoon on Tuesday. We'll get out on Wednesday. We'll get out there and see. I imagine he probably won't be doing much more today, but, you know, get him geared up for game one is the important thing. Jamari Salyer also will be watched. Maybe something going on injury-wise with him. We'll get word from Kirby Smart on that tonight. Ryan, what about Matthew Bowling? Is he a possible kick returner? This is the Georgia track true freshman.
Well, of course.
Star.
Well, he went viral with all of his video. I mean, gosh, when he runs, it's almost incredible. It's almost like his knees come up to his chest every time he strides, and they're just so long. And of course, what you were mentioning, if I think the Georgia football Twitter/Instagram/whatever social media accounts put out there that Kirby and his staff did a 4x100 race against some of the players, and he threw Richard LeCount at the fourth leg, and he thought he was going to be running against Kirby, and what ended up happening was Matthew Bowling came out there and blew him away. But yeah, you know, we talked to some of the football players yesterday, and I know Tyler Clark in particular said that you know, he never really heard of the guy, but he couldn't believe how fast he was, and I asked him if he could play football. He goes, oh yeah, definitely. So yeah, he would be nice to just throw back there, even if he's never played the game. Kind of like Forrest Gump, you know, just take the ball, run that way.
I can't remember. There was a track star from Georgia a few years ago that had some tryouts with the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Atlanta Falcons.
I
talked to him. I wrote a story on
him. He's a twin.
Garrett?
Oh, really?
I can't remember.
He wasn't one of those twins. It was like a brother, sister.
Don't know about that.
Maybe we're just pulling stuff out here. But I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that.
But I would think when you're Matthew Bowling and you have a great track future ahead of you, you don't want to take a shot coming down on a kickoff.
Well, like I've been saying, I mean, I was a little surprised he made it to campus, to be quite honest, because, I mean, guys, he's going to go big with the Olympics next year. He might be a one-year type deal here. You never know, because there's a lot of money waiting out there, Mark.
We'll see if he's an Olympic type qualifier. Remains to be seen.
Yeah.
We're going to be joined by Greg McGarrity when we come back after this. This is Mark Weiser, along with Ryan Dennis from the Athens Banner-Herald and Online Athens, and this is the Dog Bites Podcast, presented by Zaxby's. All right, joining us now is Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarrity, who is entering his 10th school year as AD. Is that right, Greg?
Absolutely, 42nd in college athletics.
Wow.
10 at UGA.
Well, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for coming to our downtown studio here.
You bet. My pleasure to be in these plush offices down here. Shoot, I don't want to hear any noise about the Buttsmere building, because this tops the Buttsmere building, okay?
Yeah. We got our corner of it anyway.
Okay.
All right, we're about 10 days out from the football season starting. Is that right? Something like that. I saw you and President Moorhead at a practice last week watching. I guess I'm presuming that you can sneak a peek on occasion. You have access that the media doesn't. So what stood out to you about this Georgia football team in year four under Kirby?
Well, there are a lot of bodies that look very similar. And so it's kind of hard to get a grasp on everyone. I go out to practice fairly often, and sometimes it's like if you see one side of the ball doing well against the other, it's like, well, you know, is that good or bad? So, you know, my main objective is a lot of times just seeing who's at practice and spending some time with them. We have certain guests that are around there, but I just try to be around a little bit, be accessible, and have sort of a general idea of what's going on out there. But I enjoy it, unless it's days like today that it's just going to be entirely too hot to be outside for you and me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, you know, when you hired Kirby and everything, I'm sure he sat down and had a vision for you. You know, how have you become receptive to his vision and what he wanted laid out? And, you know, how has it gone since, you know, is he kind of, you know, called the shots for the program and that type of stuff?
Well, when you meet with someone, you have big picture ideas, a vision of what it could become, and you really don't get down into the details of it. You just have a general sense of where one's mind is and where they want to take the program. So when we met, it wasn't, I want to be able to do this in year one, year two, year three. There were no markers there. I just know he wanted to improve every day, and that sort of is something that he practices today. He just wants to get better every day. But I think some of those things lead into experience that may a level of success. We had it very early in year two, and also a level of success last year being in Atlanta the last 2 years and at least being in the conversation nationally. And really, when we started this relationship, I think that's what we both wanted, was to be relevant nationally. And I think it's shown that we are now nationally relevant, and so that part of it has come true. But it's been interesting to see how much hard work goes into achieving that level of play. So I'm really happy with the job that Kirby and his staff have done to elevate our program to consistent heights that is what we want.
Greg, I wrote about the McGill Society a couple of weeks ago. There's a lot of money that has been raised for facilities that Kirby wants for his program, the West End Zone, the indoor practice facility, which I guess was already in the works. Mm-hmm. And then there's a football building that we've talked about.
Right, right.
Do you plan to make investments that the average fan will benefit from directly in terms of the fan experience?
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in perspective there, Mark, in all of the McGill Society, you know, if we didn't have that mechanism in place, then A, we wouldn't be able to take on that amount of debt. And what would be the outcome of that? There's only one other way to generate revenue, and that's through football tickets or donations of that nature. So what we try to do is keep that at a very low level and only do that when we really have to. So the beauty of the McGill Society, for really everyone, it keeps prices in check. Again, I don't want to go to Kirby and say, Kirby, we're not able to expand the Buttsmere building because we just don't have the money to do it. I'd have to raise prices again. So one thing that I want to make sure doesn't get lost in the shuffle is that, Mark, if you've been given a certain amount of money to sit on the 50 for years, you're not being your seats are not taken away as long as you maintain the level of giving that you've given for years. So one thing that is a benefit of that, as long as you meet the minimums, your seats are not going to be taken away. So I think that's the beauty of the system. We're getting out, it should come out in a few minutes, the latest update, sort of McGarity Minutes, what we call it, to where we're talking about enhancements. We're going to let fans bring in, you know, a bottle of water this year, which we've never done before. So that's something that we're doing. And they're I think 13 locations throughout the stadium that we have these huge water coolers where you can fill. They've got like five refillable outlets on each one, this ice cold water. So we're doing that. Also, we believe in the game experience will be enhanced with the new LED lights. I know Alabama put it out there. We were going to say that as a surprise, and we've talked about it a little bit, but save it for a surprise for our first night game to be able to do some dynamic things in there. And, of course, concessions and restrooms, we're always trying to improve that. So we're converting a lot of concession stands into this grab-and-go concept, which I don't think anybody comes to the stadium for a five-star culinary experience. They want drinks or a hot dog or something that's pre-made. And so we really tried to ramp up those experiences so people will not be in lines all day and do certain things. And Chick-fil-A is going to have their own stand at Gate 6 now and preparing the food in the stadium. So we'll see a lot of things that roll out. But those are the things that, I guess, Mark, for the everyday fan, we don't want to forget them. Obviously, and there are things we can always do to make the experience better, but those are the things we're focusing on for 2019.
Just to be clear, it's a small thing, but fans could not bring in a bottle of water at all.
Right. So we're changing that just through the hot weather to where if you come in with a bottle, I think I'm not sure the ounces or whatever, but like a bottle of water like we have, you can bring that in as long as it hadn't been opened.
Right.
So you don't, you know, have something else entering, but it's just sort of a way if someone wants to come in with that, we're softening the rules there a little bit. So it's at least a little something that we're doing to make it a little bit better.
And that's for the whole year, I mean.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yep. Well, another hot topic, I guess, alcohol sales in stadiums. And, of course, I think Vanderbilt and Tennessee, two places Georgia goes this year, will be selling alcohol. You know, how much does that come up, and is that something that you think will happen shortly in the future here at Sanford?
There are seven schools that are doing it for football, seven that are not.
Yeah.
So it's split right down the middle. I want to be real clear. We would never do this for revenue. This is not a revenue grab because it's not really intended for that purpose. We're in pretty good shape now. If and when we do it, it would be to enhance the fan experience for everyone. And there's certain measurements, but at our last athletic directors meeting, a lot of schools were asked, are they going to expand to basketball and baseball? And for even those that are providing it, they're having a wait-and-see attitude to see how it goes with football. So you never want to say never, but it's now available at NCAA championships. It was in Omaha. It was in Oklahoma City. It was in Orlando at the NCAA championships. So there's definitely a move to that. But right now, we're just not ready to move forward. But I'm sure we'll talk about that on an annual basis. And if it moves in that direction, then I'm sure we would be very public about it.
We're going to get to some fan questions a little bit later, but on this topic, Trevin on Twitter, he asked if you're aware that other athletic directors have said that alcohol incidents are significantly reduced when alcohol sales begin.
Yeah, there are a lot of studies there, Mark, that go both ways. I think what has not been studied is what happens after the game. A concern to many is, does this lead to more DUIs? Is this now going to promote, if you did promote alcohol sales? We have enough alcohol on campus as it is. But if you now do it in games, is that going to cause law enforcement to maybe have more checkpoints? So very little data has been done after the game. So we're waiting to collect that data as well. But you can cut it both ways. You know, you're taking on additional liability. Mark, for instance, if you go to a football game, and obviously you're over 21, but if you go and you decide to give your two beers to your friend that's 17 years old and they have an accident on the road, you know, where does the liability stand? Or is the 21-year-old at bay, or is it because the University of Georgia didn't do its due diligence on the front end? So a lot of data will be out there, but certainly we'll analyze all of that as we move down the road.
Well, I guess with that, I mean, student safety, is that something that's considered too? If, you know, you have a 21-year-old student who has a 19-year-old friend.
I mean, that's always there, and, you know, a large population of our students are of age. So there's, you know, frankly, there's so many liabilities that you have on game day anyway, with trip hazards, people slipping, falling. You know, if you choose not to drink and you're sitting by someone that's intoxicated, you know, we have ways now, if people notice, to where they can text in a problem in the stadium. And unbeknownst to the person that's sitting by you, you know, our security can react to that. Some people are probably hesitant about calling in or pointing out a person, but we have ways to deal with that because there are numerous cameras throughout the stadium at the gates that can certainly help patrons, that fans that have a problem with someone that's probably not acting in the best way.
Now, cell service, is it good in the stadium?
Actually, we have over 400 DAS, distributed antenna system, that's through Verizon and AT&T, and they're constantly upgrading that. So we've gone to almost a 1% drop rate in our calls now, being able to text. That's how we really communicate in game operations now, is through text. But before that was in place, needless to say, it was very difficult to communicate in the stadium. Now, bandwidth and things of that nature, you know, those are tremendous expenses that are some schools are putting in as far as Wi-Fi and bandwidth. But, you know, really, of all the things that are important to our fans now, and we do this every year with metrics and analytics and things, that, you know, that's, as long as they have connectivity, that's the main thing. So that's important to us.
Ryan was jumping ahead. Now I need to go pull this question from Bryce Dixon, who asked about when will better Wi-Fi be installed in the stadium?
Well, there's no Wi-Fi right now.
Okay, well, I guess any Wi-Fi.
As I remember, well, you've got a significant investment. It just depends on where do you want to put your dollars.
Right.
And it's always something we look at, but we feel like with the DAS system in place, you know, calling, texting, sharing information, you know, frankly, we get no complaints on that anymore. I mean, the complaints that we have either deal with sometimes post-game traffic or certain things that come up during a game, it took me long, or a restroom overflowed, things like that. But very rarely do we have anybody complaining. And, you know, the key thing is, if people experience problems in the stadium, we have so many ways to gather that information. It's just people letting us know, because we gauge our effort, really, how did we do on Sunday morning and really Monday morning, to find out who has responded in problems that we have at the stadium, so we can correct it for next week.
All right, Georgia, Florida, where do things stand now with the game in Jacksonville in terms of negotiations with the city, your talks with Scott Strickland at Florida, and what is Georgia's position on that?
Well, we'll review. We're awaiting some information on the city of Jacksonville now, what their proposal would be. We've got to remember, we have 3 years left. So the last 19, 20, 21 are covered in this. So once we have that information, we'll huddle with Kirby internally, and then obviously our peers at the University of Florida will weigh whatever is presented to us, and then we'll sit down and make a decision at the appropriate time. But, you know, I hear it both ways. So any decision you make is going to be unpopular to a certain group and popular to a lot of people. But, you know, Mark, I've seen it on both ends, for Florida for 18 years and Georgia for now, what, the balance of those years. And, you know, it's really it's a different experience for both groups. Florida, it is kind of a day game. Very rarely do people go up to the coast of Georgia or Florida. Now, the Georgia fans, probably more people take this game in outside the stadium than inside the stadium. So there are a lot of factors to weigh in this, but certainly we'll sit down at some time with Kirby and the president, and we'll sit down and discuss that.
So you and Kirby and Jerry Moorhead are not necessarily on the same page about what you want to happen with that game?
Well, like I said, we'll get in a room, and Kirby will make his points. We'll just sit down and have an adult conversation on what's best for the University of Georgia moving forward.
Of course, I'm sure something close to you with the program as a whole is the Director's Cup. 2 years ago, good football season,
yep.
You know, outstanding track seasons.
Yep.
You were in the top 10. Last year was 21st,
yep.
You know. So,
yep.
Well, expectations, I guess, for the upcoming year and all.
Well, you always, you know, our goal is for every sport to be relevant, and that's 20 out of 20, because equestrian doesn't really count in the standings. So we have very little leeway in dropping a sport that doesn't count. You know, we need to get off to a better start in the fall. Football has done its heavy lifting. Soccer, volleyball, cross country, we need to do a better job there. And then, you know, frankly, we had some sports that probably didn't finish where they traditionally have in the past that I'm sure are on an upward trajectory right now. So it's one measurement. There's so many measurements, and that is an important measurement, is how you finish. And certainly we hope to be back in the top 10. And we've been there probably not as much as I would like, but the goal still stands to where you want every sport to be relevant on a national level. And, you know, we're obviously not there in some sports, and we are in other sports, but I just see a lot of upward trends in a lot of our sports this year.
Well, speaking of track, the Matthew Bowling thing the other day, did you know that was happening, and what was your thoughts when you saw that?
Yeah, I was tipped off, and okay. I saw Petros, we got out of our cars together about 4 o'clock that afternoon, and he said, "Have you heard?" And I said, "Yeah, I've heard." So I went down to the indoor building while the team was outside and talked to Matthew a little bit and Petros about, you know, just about everything, not about that event, but just, you know, Matthew welcomed him back on campus. And so I kind of meandered out to the area kind of right in front of where Kirby parks, which would be at the last exchange point in the relay, because I wanted to kind of see how it all developed. So 5:40 arrived and I saw the players come up, and it was really funny to see the reaction, because I was down there at the end, not far from where Richard LeCount and Kirby were, and I saw some of the players. A couple of them suspected it because they looked down there and they saw Matthew Bowling down there. So I think they were putting two and two together. Wait a minute, you know, this isn't right. There's some cheating going on and gamesmanship. And the next thing you know, Richard takes the handoff, and then I've never seen anybody explode after receiving the baton that Matthew Bowling did, but it was pretty neat. His parents were there as well. So they were able to see the reaction of the football team as they left the track into the building, and it was really funny, and I'm sure his parents got a big kick out of it. But as we saw, it was really a very funny moment and fun to watch it.
Before we get to some fan questions, one more thing. In this day and age in college athletics, what keeps you up at night? What do you, I guess a head coach is probably, you know, maybe a kid runs into trouble and shows up in the jail logs. I'm sure as an AD, yeah, you probably have some bigger issues, big picture things that keep you, you know, your thoughts.
Well, you know, there are restless nights. Cheryl's, we celebrated our 42nd wedding anniversary yesterday, so she's been there every step of the way. But she can tell you that there are not many nights to where you just sleep through the night. I'm kind of restless. I don't handle things very well that are out of my control. But the things that I can control, I'm a constant worrier. I mean, I just am. And so the least little things can ignite my wandering mind on what do I need to do, plan B, things along those lines. But I guess the biggest thing is really the unknown, is either that 11 o'clock call at night or 3 in the morning or things like that you don't really expect. So you may have your day planned out, like tomorrow, my day is planned out tomorrow. Well, it could totally change with one decision or something that happens. So I think it's just really the unknown that kind of keeps you off balance. But, you know, I just don't do a very good job of that. But it's something that I need to improve on, but I haven't been able to solve it over 42 years now.
All right, let's do some fan questions from Twitter. And Johnny Dog was asking about the price of water at the stadium, but you've kind of answered that one already.
Yeah, let's get the real name, Johnny Dog, okay? I wish people would use their real name, you know. So anyway, that's a whole nother story.
So his question was about that, but he also wondered whether you all would consider fan-friendly pricing like Mercedes-Benz Stadium. He mentioned Notre Dame. I don't know if I guess I was just in the press box there. I didn't go down to buy a hot dog, so I don't know what the prices were there. But
I do know I have gotten Mercedes-Benz hot dogs for $2.
Well, yeah,
and that's nice.
They're going to get you one way or another at Mercedes-Benz. Well, so they've been able to do that. No, we constantly review our prices with our peers. Certainly it's something that we're very sensitive to, but I mean what they're doing at Mercedes and things like that are kind of trendsetters. But, you know, the cost of admission, we all know what it costs to go to the SEC championship or what the prices will be for our future games against Virginia and Clemson and Oregon. So some of these areas, they have to basically make money at the bottom line somewhere, and theirs just happens to not be concessions. So we try to be very sensitive to that. But I think from the water standpoint, that should be taken care of now, because water will essentially be free in Sanford Stadium right now if people can migrate to the certain areas where water will be provided with the free bottle that they bring in.
Well, yeah, my main concern about that is what's in that bottle, though. I mean, I guess it's got to be closed.
Well, if it's closed, right? It's okay. A judgment. I mean, we've got police, and I'm sure they'll use good judgment on that. But, you know, it's just an effort there, and we realize that some people are going to take advantage of it. But I think it helps more people than it hurts.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Duncan, that appears to be a real name. Yeah, he asked, you know, what is being done. You kind of touched on this, to retain long-term football season ticket holders who are, you know, basically given the minimum donation.
Right.
And, you know, when they can stay at home watching on TV, enjoy a cheaper drink, you know, what are y'all doing for that?
Well, we touched on a few of those. It's really the in-game experience. A lot of it's tailgating. I love to watch professional football at my home when I watch it. But there's something about the camaraderie, about being in a sense of place. I think the end of the third quarter now is something that everybody looks forward to, regardless of what the score is. So, you know, it may be that you enjoy listening to the band. It may be that you enjoy the pregame pageantry. It could be that you enjoy watching the replays on the big screen in the stadium. So it's a little bit different for each person. So I think different people get certain things out of that experience. And what we try to focus on are if we were in the position of parking, if we're in the position of going to restrooms, if we're in the position of going to concession stands, what can we do to make that experience better? Because, you know, I remember going to the SEC basketball championship in Nashville and was astonished at the lines at those concession stands. So, you know, we're not in a situation like we are at SunTrust Park, to where it's all centered around the new technology, to where multiple locations. We're dealing with a facility that, you know, has many, many years on it, and we're kind of bound by land. We can't expand to the east for the cemetery. We can't expand to the north, which we have with Reed Alley. South, you know, we're up against the chemistry building and Field Street, and then we've been able to expand as far as we can to the west. So we're kind of landlocked, and unfortunately, we have to work in those parameters. But when you're being judged up against, you know, SunTrust and Mercedes-Benz and Phillips, you know, it's just not an even game.
All right. L Dog asks...
real name.
He has a question about...
That used to be Lawrence Wright's name at the University of Florida, L Dog. So if this is Lawrence Wright, bring it on.
L is E-L spelled... Okay. He's asking about the Buttsmere expansion, an update coming at the athletic board meeting, and this is not his part of the question. I guess I will assume you will be asking for reserves from the athletic board at that meeting.
Well, we will be talking about that project in depth to our board on the day before the Murray State game. And I know the members of the media and everyone will like to see the projections that we'll have on the screen that day as far as expansion, what it looks like, what it includes and things. And so we'll discuss that with our board. But coming out of that meeting, I think everyone will have a sense of what we're trying to do and how we're paying for it and things of that nature. But it's going to be very exciting, and I can't wait for people to see what we have in store.
Before I get to one more question here from a Twitterer, curiosity myself, the new lights and all, is that with the third quarter, fourth quarter in mind? I mean, is that anything big
that's
planned?
That's part of it, but we have the LED technology like they have in SunTrust Park now. So you see what they do between innings when they bring in a pitcher. And, you know, so there are certain things from a color standpoint we're able to really enhance that experience. So, you know, our goal was to kind of break it out for the Notre Dame game because that was a night game. And we'll have certain things in there. But, you know, it's some gadgets that we have. You know, there'll be a lot of people interested in the amount of savings we'll have from a electricity a standpoint of being green technology, because we were at the point anyway where we were going to have to make a change in our lights. It was at the end of their life span, but we'll be providing data on how much money we're really saving. And we use the stadium in so many ways, and now we may be able to just have 10% of the lights on as opposed to either all on or all off. But it's kind of like having a dimmer. And it could be different colors. So we're really I haven't seen it yet. I've seen them up, but I haven't seen them lit, and I have not seen them use them at night.
They're fully installed already?
Oh, yeah. Okay. They're in place, and so I think that's just something that – We'll really be able to tell at night games. Pretty much during day games, it's not going to be a factor, but we'll certainly see it maybe at the end of the Arkansas State game, or perhaps it will definitely in full store for Notre Dame.
It was John Matry, I believe, asked you know, about football scheduling, yes, and you know, these high-profile matchups, right, that have been scheduled. But also, is there any way you can say which programs Georgia's reached out to or had contact with, and what's their you know, response and all of that?
Well, he was also asking if you can say what conference in particular some of the feelers.
Let's
have
just
been.
Put it. Well, there are Power Five conferences. We're focusing on those. Okay, we're not focusing on the Pac-12. Okay, so that narrows it to four.
Is that distance? Okay. Is that, I mean,
distance? Yeah, I mean, it's a long way to go, and we'll experience that when we play UCLA. Sure. But you know, it was in the news about some communication between us and the University of North Carolina. We'd love to play a home and home game with Chapel Hill. There are other schools that, you know, we want to go to. We'd still love to go to some iconic stadiums, whether regardless of what area. I mean, we're going to Texas, going to Oklahoma. We'd love to engage in Big Ten schools. You know, we've got it with FSU and Clemson and Tech in the ACC. And so we'll never stop doing that. And so Josh Lee, who I have to give a lot of credit, is kind of leading our effort and talking to his counterparts. And then from an AD level, we would probably enter the picture when it's time to really get the deal done. But Josh does a great job with it, and his relationship with his counterparts, and then Kirby's relationship with all these other coaches. Kirby is really connected in the college football world. So, you know, when Kirby can pick up the phone and ask someone if they'd like to play a game, you know, that resonates. But he has a remarkable reach in the world of college football, and that's a big plus to the University of Georgia.
All right, Greg, we appreciate you joining us here, and you know, maybe we can do it when the season's over. If not before, come on down again, and I know it's going to be an exciting season that the fans and even the media, we don't root for the Bulldogs, but we always root for an exciting season, because we certainly had that a couple years ago when we went out to California.
I'll tell you what, I do know it's a lot more fun to go to Pasadena and Atlanta and New Orleans than some of our previous destinations. So we know that, I know you guys have to be neutral, and but I know you are pulling for us to be in these great cities to where you can visit, have good food, good fellowship, and be in the big time. So we'll try to make your lives better from that standpoint as well.
Yeah, I'm lobbying for the Bahamas Bowl to become part of the national championship.
If we're there this year, we got some issues.
No, okay. No, just as a national semi.
Will you be in Maui?
I will not be in Maui. Nope, I'll be here
Georgia
working
Tech Week.
Hard,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
Hard at task here. But
we keep lobbying to send us out there.
But, well, hey, I'm all for it. I'd love to have coverage on the road, and I could think of no better reason for you guys to be in Hawaii during that time. But anyways, great being with you guys, and look forward to working with you guys in the future. And anytime you need me, you know, I'm pretty accessible. So have a good day.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Don't forget to shoot us a review at the Apple Store or in the Google Podcasts app. And we appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in each week. This is the Dog Bites Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, Ryan, we're going to meet with Kirby Smart tonight, the last time before game week, and there's still some questions we have. I'm not sure if Kirby's going to address these yet. My guess is that any competition for starting jobs are still to be determined based on the last week and a half of practice, but it looks like Cade Mays might have that nod over Ben Cleveland for the starting right guard job. You know, we've seen Mays out there ahead of Cleveland, you know, when they're going through their drills. And Cade's getting a lot of praise in terms of his versatility. He's been working at center, can play some tackle as well. And, you know, do you think that's going to stick with Cade ahead of Ben?
I think it's an all-year battle. I mean, I think one could start one week and one could start the next. And, you know, as we've talked about in the past, how injuries pop up here and there. And, you know, like you said, as versatile as Cade is, he could go from guard to, you know, left tackle all of a sudden. You know, it could you know, it could change week to week, and there you have Ben waiting, or you have you know, maybe a Jamari that could hop in there at some point. But yeah, I guess that's for now. Maybe the first week it'll be Cade, but you know, things can change on that physical line.
Yeah, so it looked like N'Kobe Dean, speaking of position battles, had a chance to kind of maybe push Tae Crowder, mm-hmm. Monty Rice for a starting job. And you know, certainly they all would at least play along with the backups, I would imagine, to a certain extent in these first 3 weeks of the season. I think defensive line is another area where there could be a lot of movement in terms of who's hot, like you mentioned, who's had a good week of practice, what matchups might be. They're very deep with a lot of seniors, as well as young guys like Jordan Davis, the freshman from Upson Lee as well, number 44.
Is that Trayvon?
Trayvon Walker.
Yeah.
So those guys could kind of fill in there and put, I mean, Jordan Davis, you know, is going to get, he's a major contributor. So, mm-hmm. Walker, you know, maybe in certain situations, but I think there's a lot of, you know, probably going from the 1, 2, 3 to 7, 8, 9, you might have a lot of depth at that position.
Yeah, I think Tyler Clark talked about that a little bit last night, you know, about how they can do a lot, but he's also one that wasn't happy with the way he played last year, so we'll see how productive he can be, and I know a lot of people think about that Rose Bowl and how much of a difference maker he was there, so I know that's on his mind still.
The wide receivers we mentioned, I know you were looking yesterday. I don't want to call out any names, but somebody you mentioned had 3 drops yesterday that you saw in the little 11,
I did, yep.
7, 10-minute period, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, you know, considering that J.J. Holloman was lost to dismissal in June, you know, you lost the other top 5 wideouts in terms of receiving yards, or including him, you know, you have to feel better that guys like George Pickens, you know, D-Rob, we've talked about in terms of, you know, whether he can be a consistent guy in the SEC, you know, Don Blaylock, Matt Landers, Lawrence Cager, you know, you think there's enough of these guys that someone's going to step up and be a consistent, legit, you know, receiver for Jake Fromm.
Well, I think we all expected Pickens and Dom would come in and contribute, but at this moment, judging from what I was looking at yesterday, it does seem that Pickens might be ahead of Dom in the pecking order as of now. So, but yeah, I mean, we knew somebody's going to have to step up, and I think Landers might get that first opportunity to prove he might be the guy that's, you know, kind of that Holloman fill-in.
All right, at tight end, I think that's still a question in terms of what they have after Charlie Warner. Fitzpatrick, you know, he has to do it. And, you know, last year was a redshirt, played, you know, a couple games. Rylan Godey comes in as coming off an injury in high school and then is dealing with a hand injury now, but it's still practicing. And you have Eli Wolf out of Tennessee, the grad transfer. But, you know, how deep are they at that position? Still to be determined. And, you know, Charlie Warner, I think, is the bell cow there.
Absolutely, and I think Fitzpatrick's ready. Of course, we haven't seen him in too much of a game-style action, but, yeah, from judging just their independent, you know, practice workouts, which is pretty much Hartley having them shed off a block and catching a pass, it seems like Fitzpatrick's that guy that'll be there behind Werner.
All right, one other area I want to talk about, which in terms of what we've learned during this preseason, and we'll touch on a lot of this next week in terms of other things that jump out. Zamir White, we're not really talking about, you know, is he going to be able to help? I think there's a thought that what you've seen, you know, not we haven't seen it live, but you've seen video clips, you've heard Kirby talk about it, that he's going to be a legitimate contributor. And, you know, whether it's going to be 5 carries the first game, 8 carries, I mean, it's going to be probably a feel thing for the coaching staff and see how Zamir feels. But, you know, he's kind of a force when you give him the ball and he has a chance to run over would-be tacklers and defense. They don't really want to try to have to bring him down.
That's what Kirby said, right? He's a man out there. But, yeah, there's got to be some little hesitation or some nerves and, you know, some confidence to be built. And, you know, it's almost like a workout regimen, you know, where you start from the, you know, progress upwards. So I think that's what we'll see. Don't expect him to come out and get like 15 carries in the first game or anything.
Hey, we should mention this. I guess it'll be online, and if you took part last year, you probably get an email, but we're going to be doing the Pick'em contest again starting next week, and we're probably going to go with a new name this year, right, Ryan?
No, we're sticking with Wiser Than Wiser.
That what? Was a That's huge, a terrible
huge success. Name. Huge success last year.
Was it? All right.
Everybody was just trying to beat you, and
All right. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, maybe two or three people did, but not many.
All right, we're not picking the two games this week, but we'll do some picks on the podcast next week. I'm not sure which day we're doing that yet, but we'll have maybe a dozen games that we'll pick, and hopefully you'll do the same at onlineathens.com next week. I think it'll probably be up there by Monday, I would imagine.
Do believe that's the plan, yes.
AP Top 25 came out on Monday, and Georgia number 3, that's where I had them. I'm one of the 62 or 63 voters. I don't remember what it is, but I had Alabama number 1 in my poll. I think 10 people across the country, including myself, picked them there, and Clemson number 2. The reason I did, I think Bama's got definitely something to prove this year. I think there's a lot of thoughts that they were a no-show against Clemson, or at least got their butts handed to them. I think as well, Alabama's got incredible receivers and a quarterback that's very proven when healthy. So, and I have concerns about Clemson's defensive line, although I'm told that they still have talent, in the wings. So they're going to step up. But, that's going to be in flux in terms of I'll look how Bama does in week 1 against Duke. I'll see how Clemson does against Georgia Tech. And who knows, maybe I'll flop them after the first week.
I don't get to vote in that. So,
Wait, who would you go with, Clemson?
No, I think I like your Alabama. I mean, they always seem to find some motivation, but I think that their wide receiver core is probably the best in the country, and Tua obviously is he's one of the best in the country as well. So, how do you get involved in that? By the way, I think I'm curious. People are curious. Is it an email sent out saying, "Hey, Mr. Wiser, pick this, please"?
AP out of Atlanta, they have to pick 2 in every state. Well,
oh, it's like a senator. You're a senator. You're an AP senator.
Well, I think it's based on how many division or FBS teams are in that state. So we have 2 in the state of Georgia.
So it's like a Congress.
There's some other states that have more, I think, depending on how many programs they have. But and even I have Missouri number 25. They were ineligible for the coaches poll. If you're that interested, you can find my picks. I think it's collegepolltracker.com. They keep tabs everybody. And I think AP has their own website as well. That you can pull up the window and scroll down. News also of Georgia's week 3 opponents. Some sad news. Arkansas State coach Blake Anderson's wife died after a cancer battle. Certainly our thoughts are with him, and I'm sure that when that week comes along that Georgia will do what they can to remember his wife, and he took a leave of absence. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out. I actually talked to him before the SEC championship game because I was doing a story about Alabama and how to defend the high-scoring offense, and Arkansas State played them in week 1, and he was nice enough to return my call. And
and I'm sure it didn't come up, but she's been battling it for a while, right?
No, I knew about it at the time.
Right.
But it didn't come up in our conversation, and he was gracious enough to give me some time on the phone. So some sad news there. And flipping back to football, Vanderbilt, another opponent early in the season, week 1, has not announced their starting quarterback, and apparently Derek Mason told media in Nashville yesterday that they're going to wait until game time to announce it. It's a Ball State grad transfer quarterback, Riley Neal, and junior Deuce Wallace are fighting it out. So
I'm sure Kirby and them are shaking in their boots at which quarterback they're going to get that day.
Hey, why there it is. Ryan has guaranteed a win for Georgia over Vanderbilt.
Yeah, pretty
I think
much.
The point spread's like 21 or something. Mm-hmm. Also, we need to make mention, Georgia picked up yet another offensive line commitment, this time Cedric Van Praan.
Yes, sir. was that wasn't quite as good, was it?
Yeah, so Sam Pittman did do a Yes Sir video, and I think it was the Saints come marching in? Is that what it was?
I couldn't really tell. I was trying to listen to what was in it.
It was definitely something New Orleans flavor, because that's where this guy's from, 4-star offensive lineman.
Always a theme to it.
I didn't stay up for that 10:30 commitment. I think I was already crashed that night.
Yeah, I was up for it and got it online. I've been thinking, like, you know, some of these guys just commit to see what Pittman will do, and then, okay, yeah, never mind, I'm backing out. Just see how he would, you know, how he would,
now,
how he would honor them or whatever with his yes, sir.
I'm trying to think, like, you know, what commitments are actually a surprise to the coaching staff. Like, George Pickens, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of times these coaches know a kid gives them a commitment and they sit on it for a week and a half, and, you know.
Well, I feel like all the recruiting services are so into it now, you know, and they seem to be on top of it. Maybe they follow that and get a sense from that and stuff too. And I don't know.
All right, I think it's probably slowing down in terms of commitments because real football's coming next week, and not that recruiting's not real. That's how you get the guys lined up into your programs. But the focus will go to on-field stuff next week, and we will be here with the podcast to talk everything that's going on as Georgia gears up for Vanderbilt.
Game week
coming up. So thanks for listening to the Dog Bites podcast from the Athens Banner-Herald. Again, please drop us a line. You can email me, Mark. Let's see, you could actually just do M Weiser, WEISZER, at onlineathens.com. Find me on Twitter at MARCWEISZER. Ryan, what are your handles?
Hit me up on email, rdennis@onlineathens.com or rhinodennis19 on the Twitter handle.
All right, the Dog Bites podcast is presented each week by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit zaxbys.com.